It's a black man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. So, you know, we talked about the accumulation phase. What tips do you have for the brothers and sisters that are in the preservation phase, where they're about to retire this year, whether they, like my mom, just retired a year ago, where they had money in the stock market. They still are investing, but it's not as heavy as they were when they were working. You know, they're getting 70% of their income. But what tips do you have for, you know, I would say, but I'm really talking more about the Henrys, where, okay, you know what? I've been comfortable working. Now I'm retiring. I may have a kid, because I'm looking at studies saying when kids graduate in college, they're moving back home. But that means you're messing up mom and pop's retirements. I go to people's houses 11, 12 in the morning on a Tuesday. I'm like, your daughter looking like she my age. Why she still got a bonnet on? It's noon. Yeah, so anyway, but let's talk about the preservation phase and what techniques and tips to keep people who may still want to gently invest, or they're like, listen, I don't want to lose my money due to this volatility.
It's just about balance. And sometimes we don't know what our target is. So we're kind of working, we're winging it and reacting. So I want to encourage Henry's when you're working towards preservation versus someone that's already in preservation mode. That's two different things. So those that are working towards preservation, you need to know your number, which is how much income do you want to generate when you want work to be optional and not required? How much income do you want on an annual basis, right? When you know what that annual amount is, what number is that 5% of? Like, this is just some basic rule of thumbs. Like, it's like just basic. What number is that 5% of? If you want to make $200,000 a year, what number is that 5% of? Whatever that number is, that becomes your principal. That's the amount that, like, that's the principal that you need to be accumulating. So when you're trying to accumulate money, you know what total amount you need to accumulate. Now, here's the thing. To get to that number, it's not just about saving. It's not just about putting it in a savings account. To get to that number, it's like, hey, I need to get a certain rate of return to reach that principal amount in a certain period of time. And whatever that rate of return is, now your job as a CEO, or if you go outsource it to a co-CEO, is what investment allocations is going to help me achieve this rate of return? And it may look different than the traditional model. Most people aren't practicing the traditional model. They call it a 60-40 portfolio, where you're mostly in the stock market, some bonds, some mutual funds. It may not be that. And you got to be prepared to understand that. Like, wait, there's other things to invest in? Yes, there is. Yes, there is. So you have to know how much income you want, what that number is 5% of. That's going to lead to your principal. Once you know what your principal is, if I'm saving X amount of dollars per year, what rate of return do I need to get to that principal? Now I have to find my team that's going to help me get that rate of return. That's for my high income earners.
Got you. Now, what about, like I was saying, on the back end, where, like I said, I'm a month from retirement, but I'm hearing a lot of these brothers and sisters saying, you know, I'm a little nervous. I don't know. I mean, I hit my point. I hit the mark that I want, but I'm seeing these tariffs. I'm seeing this economic certainty. I'm a little nervous. Should I not retire? Should I just ride the wave another year? Like that, I'm hearing that like out of control, like from a lot of people. So let's talk about that for people, like I said, that are in the preservation phase, where they don't want to take losses because they're like, well, hell, I don't work about 30, 40 years. I got mine. But with this economic uncertainty, with the tariffs, how do you calculate that into the equation?
You know, those are the uncertain things we're always going to be unaware of. We just don't know what's going to happen and when. So for those that are already in the wealth preservation mode, the same thing kind of applies. I know I got this certain amount of money. What rate of return do I need to get this type of income from it? Do I need to stay invested this way to do that, or can I make some changes? And having the professional to go to have that conversation about what that looks like. If I make some changes, how do those changes impact me long term? Not just today, not just now. Tariffs are the conversation today, but how do they impact my portfolio or my income that I'm trying to earn long term? So based on my math, it says I only need X amount of percent rate of return. Here's the thing, the market is going to go up and down, period. It's going to go up and down. Maybe we just need to consider having more of our portfolio in a safety measure that's going to guarantee us some income, that's going to guarantee us some source while we leave some to ride that wave because we need that growth. We need the place where we need the growth is going to go up and down. But we just got to have that balance of safety in there. And safety comes in different forms. Some people, it comes in the forms of bonds. Some people, it comes in the forms of annuities. Some people, comes in the forms of their own self-funded pension plans. But we got to have that to where, okay, I'm going to turn off taking money from the market because I can't afford to take money from it while it's down because that just compounds my losses. But I need to figure out how I can get more of my portfolio to the guaranteed side. Like, oh, just for right now, I'll leave that over there to do what it does. So, again, this isn't blanket information or advice. These are just conversation starters that you could have with your professional. Like, what can I do with them? There's no one size fits all, ever, ever. Everything is customizable.
I just wanted to piggyback on exactly what you were saying, Ms. Davis. So my wheelhouse is investing and trading, and amongst it, I teach it to go out to first responders as a little side 1099 job. I do that too. So in that preservation mode, one thing I would just add, and what I teach to a lot of students is when you're in that preservation mode, you want to be more conservative, of course, with your investments and moving your money around. And one thing that you were saying, the market does work in cycles, like you were saying. It's if you've been in it long enough, you see it over and over again. And I would have a lot of students ask about the tariffs and ask about, the how the market is right now and what they should be doing. And somebody with their retirement, they were worried about their 401ks. And some of us, for the younger ones, they're in their 20s. I was like, we shouldn't even be having this conversation. You got a lot of time before you can even touch anything anyway. So
You're right.
that's number one. You don't need to worry about it. But for those seasoned, investors in the preservation phase, putting your money into something safe, like even the S&P 500, you typically you're guaranteed 10%, historically, a Vanguard account, dividend ETFs, right? Where unless the company just completely goes bankrupt or just starts to have multiple quarterly losses, for the most part, you're going to get your money. Your dividend is going to drip into those accounts. So dividend accounts, maxing out Roth IRAs if possible. And for me, for example, mine is self-directed. I mean, I even invest and trade out of my retirement accounts. And I do that because the capital gains are tax-free as long as it's in that retirement account, as long as I'm not pulling it out. So, but that's not for everybody. But I would say being more conservative, compound interest accounts even, right? A lot of people don't understand simple versus compound interest. So compound interest accounts, dividend ETFs, even the S&P, Vanguard, any of those more conservative options would be a better way. At least that's what I tell a lot of my students, the way to preserve your wealth is putting it in a safety, more conservative account, such as those I just mentioned. So I didn't know if you wanted to say anything about that either.
You are absolutely correct. I agree with some, I'll call them allocations, in this conversation, and taking advantage of other ways to generate returns or to generate the income. Because usually in preservation mode, you want to live off of that principal amount. And it can come in so many different ways. I love the dividend strategy. I almost, for me personally, again, I don't want this to be blanket advice. We are just having a conversation. But for me personally, in my personal portfolio, I prefer dividend paying stocks, or dividend ETFs, individual or ETFs, for the purpose of that. If the market is down, I still want to be paid. Like there's still some money to be made, and I don't have to make emotional decisions as it comes to the portfolio. So even in the hardest part about preservation mode is not being driven by emotion, not panicking and making financial decisions out of urgency versus out of strategy. That is the biggest I think challenge in the preservation mode, because we're immediately thinking we're just going to lose everything. There's okay to pivot and make certain changes, but we just don't want to do too much that's going to completely devastate our portfolio from growth, because everybody needs that growth because of inflation, taxes, things that's just constantly going up. We need that growth side. So I agree.
So, I'm looking at your bio. I'm like, how you go from Ohio State biology to the founder of L West Advisors? Like, let's talk about that in your journey.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let me see how to start this. So the first thing I should incorporate in there is the role that my husband played. So I am the youngest of four. My mother was a single parent, and I was fortunate to see a lot of the things that I did not want just from being the youngest. So in a way of, crafting my future, I wanted to become a doctor because I thought that was what was going to change, the generational curses I felt like we were struggling with. So I studied biology, went to the Ohio State University under biology. But in the midst of that, my husband always had an entrepreneur spirit. He was determined, for us to own our own business. Now, we were very young at the time, college students, broke college students. Why you want to start a business while we're broke college students? I never quite understood that side. But from him doing that and having that vision and perspective and getting me to buy into that vision, it just became a path now. It's like a fork in the road. Growing, trying to start a business, grow a business, struggling with the lessons in it. I realized eventually that the problem was that we didn't understand the money side of business. We figured, some marketing, some effort, crafting a service, whatever, an offer, whatever, but it's like the money side, cash flow management, income statements, balance sheet structure. We didn't know nothing about any of that. So I wanted to fill that gap. So I learned it more for us, but figured that there were other business owners that were struggling with some of those same things. So I started to help business owners separate their business and personal finances in a way to be more structured financially for their business side. Combine that with my own trauma experience, or I'm sorry, traumatizing experience of losing my brother. And seeing the financial state of our family, even after being an entrepreneur for about 5 years, I realized, like, oh, I'm doing all of this thinking it's going to change some type of status, but we're still here unable to cover the death of a loving family member. So then from there, it's like I just decided to jump full time from like just not knowing the financial side from our business, but knowing it and providing it to a service and just kind of grew within the financial and services industry from there.
We've had brothers come on and say, you got to have seven streams of income. You need to have real estate. You need to have crypto. You need to have stocks. You need to have, I heard the bonds is back. Well, bonds been back. I've been saying that for like the last 3 years on the show. So I guess bonds been back. And you need to have, So what for you, do you do any real estate investing, any stocks? Like, give us some of your portfolio.
Yes. So, going back to starting businesses originally, this was back in 2009. I'm kind of showing my age here. Well, we started businesses and kind of fell into selling them. Build it. You know what? This business ain't quite. We took some hard lessons there, so let's just sell what we have. So we started with a cleaning company. We did that. We built it to a number of contracts. We sold those contracts. We struggled in the cleaning company with labor. So we're like, you know what? I know other businesses struggle with this. Then we started a headhunting service. We started that, did that for about 5 years, built that business. We sold that. From there, then we kind of diversified our portfolio more into hospitality. So we've owned several restaurants, kind of dabbed in there. We was fortunate to kind of be in a leap year, I'll say, right when COVID happened. We had just sold a pizzeria January of 2020, March of 2020, COVID hit. So we were out of the restaurant business right when that happened. It was crazy. And then we jumped back into it about 2023. And then real estate has always been a major part of our portfolio and a major learning curve too. We experienced all of the, we were able to get into real estate at a time where the entry point was much lower, but we experienced like redlining and just, again, lack of structure. All of that stuff was like, we had to learn that stuff the hard way. So now today, it's still very much hospitality, real estate, other product-based businesses that's in our portfolio, but we really enjoyed the building and selling, and then moved into buying businesses, redeveloping them, and then selling them again. So that's most of our portfolio consists of.
Got you any crypto, anything like that?
No crypto for me. I kind of missed out on, at least for us, our personal portfolios. We didn't get to jump on that wave probably at the time, but no crypto for us right now. But I know that's something we definitely need to look into. We have a mandate, and this is what we create for clients too. It's an investment policy statement that tells you how you're going to allocate your money for a specific period of time, typically for a year. This is how you prevent from going for like shiny object syndrome. It's like, hey, our money is supposed to be allocated in real estate. We're going to do 20% of our money in real estate. Once we hit that 20%, that's it. Even if a golden deal comes along, like, dang, I wish I would have met you 6 months ago because we already allocated our 20%. So that's kind of how we drive our portfolio. And that's how we drive portfolios for clients too.
From a financial perspective, how did you know that you were at that level where you could say, hey, mom, I can retire you?
No, actually, it was more. So this is why it's going to convey to the point in part one about finding roles and where they fit. My mother was a caregiver for over 30 years. My husband and I have four children. It was difficult to build the dream or the vision that my husband had painted for me. It was difficult to build it without mommy guilt. Like it was hard. So I always have to outsource certain levels of care for my children. It was money we were already spending. So the retirement came in the form of, instead of me paying this money outside of our family enterprise, I can circulate this money. So I just gave that income to my mother. So that same income we were already spending, I then gave it to my mother. And then now that is that's her primary role, is again the caregiving side. Now I feel way more confident with the care that my children were getting. But it was just redirecting income versus a matter of calculation, like, oh, I've reached a certain point, I'm ready to retire you. I'm spending this money anyway. So now it's just like I'm no longer just going to spend it outside of what we call our personal economy. I'm going to bring it back in and just gave it to my mother. So that's really how that came about.
I felt like you're kind of like I said, we've had 150 shows, so we done seen all the flavors, heard all the everything. You're almost like you're like a calculus mutant of everybody, but it's like wow, like I'm blown away with what you said because like for me, if I said I want to retire my mom, I would be like, okay, I need to have like a few million set up, not taking into account the mindset that you're giving us today. I would almost have this, like almost like you're saying, almost like the gold glitter mindset, where for me to do that, I need X, Y, and Z, and it has to be lined up in this exact order, or else I don't believe I can achieve this goal. But from the po but from the point of view that you're telling me, it's like I could have been did that. You know how many pairs of True Religion I bought? No, but I mean, I ain't going there. I'm just on a, and that's on a low level. You know what I'm saying? But I'm just saying, like, from the legacy perspective and the way that you're outlining it with this family CEO mindset, it's very captivating. I must tell you that.
Thank you.
Wow. And I see my brother Caleb back on. I know he got something. Let's go.
Yeah, I just wanted to actually piggyback on that. Like, to be real, like that's kind of what like me and my wife were doing with like her parents. Like, I mean, they're already retired, but what they do, especially because with the shifts and everything and the way we gotta work now, like what they've been doing is they've been helping us like with childcare. So like we live in different places right now. But they live in so we live in Mar we live in Southern Maryland. They live in Southern Virginia, which is about 3 hours apart. So they come up like twice. Shoot, lately it's been like every week they'll come up for like half the week and just help us like either take the kids to school or drop them off or whatever the case might be, which is really like before and after care. So we were like, you know, we've been having those discussions of like, well, why don't y'all just move up in this area? You know what I mean? And then what we'll do is we'll just reallocate the money that we're paying towards before and after care to y'all. You know what I'm saying? And that way it makes it worth your while, but it's still keeping the money in the family. And then to your point, to what we've been talking about this whole time, to your point, it goes back into the family ecosystem. So then we all of us, like all four of the adults in the situation, can then come together and be like, all right, how are we going to economically envision our future? Because whatever they get is going to come back to us and to their other kids, you know, anyway, right? So then, you know, and I just, that's what I was saying. I just wish, Like, that's why I was encouraging you, because I just wish more. I think we need to think like this more, because the way the future is going, like, we need our families. And it's like we've been brought up to think of ourselves as like individual pieces. Like, I get mine and I don't worry. I get mine. Like, so as a man, right? I get mine. I marry my wife. I got my wife and I got my kids, and that's all I'm concerned with. And it's like, nah, we need to be concerned, horizontally and vertically, right? We need to be concerned intergenerationally with our parents and our children, you know what I'm saying? But also with our brothers and our sisters and our cousins. And we need to make that the unit. That needs to be the business unit. So I'm saying that to you so you can write that book, because I don't.
Yes, you are giving me everything I need to write.
Yeah, I'm saying
I
that
appreciate
to you.
it.
I'm giving
I
it. That's what I'm saying. I'm
appreciate
giving
it.
it to you.
Even what you're just getting from this conversation, I feel like I have fulfilled my purpose to be on Black Man Sunday. For
You
even
did.
for you guys
You
to receive it this way, because you guys are the visionary leaders. You are the head of the households. You guys are there for the emotional balance. Everybody here play chess?
Oh, yeah, I play.
Yeah, Chess
Okay.
King right here. Yeah, Chess King.
A
I got
very
$20 if you all want some of this. Let's go.
I don't gamble. I don't gamble.
Right, I play for money.
Listen, okay, but what I encourage you all, do you guys play with your wives?
I used to, not anymore, but we used to play.
Yeah,
Okay,
I'm
so
teaching her spades now. Chess too advanced. I'm teaching her
now,
spades right now. Going from Uno to spades, you know what I'm saying?
play is when we are at war. Like, okay, that's a different thing. Now, but no, I encourage you guys to bring the boards back out for your wives. The only reason why I'm in front of you all having these type of conversations today, again, I was not always one in pursuit of greatness. I got that from my husband, but in the midst of in the pursuit of that, there was some wild moments that we all go through as teenagers in high school and things like that. Probably the teachers that taught me in school didn't think I would be here today, the person that I am today. And my husband got that raw version of that when I met my husband my senior year of high school. So he was like right there in the midst of from troubled child to dedicated professional. Like he got all of that. But the only reason that made that transition to dedicated professional, he sat me down to teach me how to play chess. And as a troubled individual, I didn't want to learn because I was just like, I don't got time for this. Like, what is this? But he taught me how to play chess. He taught me, like, hey, each piece can move in a specific direction or a limited direction, certain spots, et cetera. So here's the bishop can do this, the pawn can do this, the knight can do this. But once we, when he saved the king and queen for last, he's like, let me show you how I move, like what the king does. I can move one step at a time. I can move one square to the left, one square to the right, one square to the front, one square to the back. Those are my movements. Now let me show you how the queen can move. And he said, the queen can move in any direction on the board. She has the freedom and the power to move across the board as she sees fit. So he expressed to me that there are rooms that I'm going to be able to get in that he can't. There are conversations I'm going to be able to have that he can't. There are partnerships I'm going to be able to secure because he can't. But if I stay in that troubled child mentality, that survival mentality, we aren't going to be able to achieve the dreams because you aren't going to be able to move across the board how you need to move. So one thing about it for you guys as visionaries and leaders, if you opt to become the family CEO, is recognizing the feminine power and highlighting it, encouraging it, and empowering it, and fostering it, because it's going to move you a lot further across the board than if you were to just try to bear that weight on your own. It's imperative. So do not discount the power of your significant others, of the women in your lives, whether they are in the form of your wife, in the form of your daughters, in the form of your mothers. Do not underestimate and encourage that power. So, like, I just wanted to make sure I made that statement for sure, as you guys are already the natural CEOs, but just the way to maximize and optimize that power is by, like, listen, let me show you, like, we're gonna go a lot further if you're involved and bought in.
You know what? We're gonna wrap it up right. I got one more
Yeah.
question, but I ain't even gonna do you like that. That was so fire. We wrapping it up right here. Lavaysha Davis coming on Black Men Sundays gave us the game. The game. I mean, my brain is like exploding right now. I appreciate you. Hope you had a great time on Black Men Sundays. Hope we can have you back.
When you get that book written, you need to come back on Black Men Sunday because we'll all buy that book. But I'm gonna need mine autographed though, you
I
know.
got you. I got you. I got you. It wouldn't be any other way. It would not be any other. Corey, Ray, Kalali, I appreciate all of you and sharing your platform. We can have these candid conversations to move our community forward in real ways, not just, not just tidbits, not just spoon-fed ways, but real ways where we could take our economic power back.
Yep, I appreciate you. I appreciate your time and have a great work week.
Yes, you guys too. You guys too.
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. It's a Black Man Sunday.